Hello and welcome to Press Review Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Submission and domination, what the West seeks from Iran. This is according to the Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Larijani, who was addressing the We in the West conference in Tehran and reiterating the words of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Now, this is the reason the West opposes Iran's independence and strength and is not willing to compromise. A hegemonic force does not want ties which can benefit both parties. It wants domination and sees itself as superior and above the rest. And Iran will never submit to hegemony. Well, we're going to be taking a look at this on a spotlight, but first, let's take a look at this package.
Sharp criticism was directed at the West's hegemonic agenda, as the Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Larijani, addressed a high-profile conference on Iran's relations with the West. He underscored that global relations are increasingly tied to raw power rather than principles of justice or cooperation. Larijani pointed directly at Washington's role in undermining international norms, saying the United States has replaced law with force. He warned that this shift leaves nations with a stark choice: surrender their independence or face aggression.
Mr. Trump insists on disrupting these systems and replacing international law with power. The meaning of this undesirable action is that general international rules are no longer peacemaking. Rather, power serves as a means of achieving peace. Therefore, countries have to submit to this power at the cost of their independence, otherwise this power will wage wars against them.
The words came with a clear example. Iran was engaged in negotiations with the United States when U.S.-Israeli forces launched strikes on Iranian territory. This sudden escalation revealed the true intent behind Washington's diplomacy, seeking submission rather than compromise. As images of U.S. complicity circulate and U.S. President Trump's posts on X resurface, the contradiction between talk of peace and acts of war becomes impossible to ignore. Larijani emphasized that Iran's policy has never called for severing trade relations with the West. However, the West's hegemonic behavior and political interventions have disrupted cooperation. He added that Iran remains committed to cultural exchanges, which should be based on mutual benefit and enrichment. Iran is neither hegemonic nor willing to compromise its independence, standing firm in its pursuit of sovereignty and self-determination. He then proposed a solution for when power replaces logic for the world's nations.
Countries express more resentment toward the United States. When the international arena turns into a jungle and power replaces logic, there's no other way for us but to unite and grow stronger together. They want negotiations for the sake of new kind of domination and submission, not for a fair compromise. Wasn't Iran negotiating when, all of a sudden, they started a war?
As power replaces diplomacy, nations are left with no choice but to resist and unite in defense of their sovereignty. Iran's stance remains clear. It seeks mutual respect and cooperation, not submission under the guise of negotiation.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. And Tony Glasslin, historian and investigative journalist out of Bristol. Well, thank you both for being with me. Let me start it off in London. Said Mohsen, I mean, this conference which was held was on the views and thoughts of Ayatollah Khamenei, an attempt to clarify the path and responsibility of Iran when dealing with hegemony. Your perspective, how important is this for those inside and outside of Iran to understand why the relationship between Tehran and Washington and other places in the West is the way it is?
Well, it's hugely important to talk about a vision and a dream that isn't one that is in lockstep with the current neoliberal, neoconservative, Zionist, Western imperialist one. There is only either the Chinese version of things, or you've got these American versions. The Russians have their take on things as well. So amongst them, I guess Iran is the only other one with an alternative vision. It's rooted in the Islamic Revolution. It's rooted in the principles of the Abrahamic faith. It isn't really an aggressive one. It's been a defensive one since the day it was born, because the Americans have created that situation. And the reality is that now Iran is faced with some existential reality. Jewish supremacy seems to be increasingly taking hold, Zionist Jewish supremacy taking hold of Western political circles, not the people necessarily, but certainly the establishment. And you've also got, of course, the old school European supremacism, which hasn't really gone away from within the establishment, and US imperialism along with that, and add to it greater Israel plans. You know, everything that's set out to basically subjugate and create servitude, or create balkanization and war. That's the option which the empire is giving. And Iran is one of the few that is brave enough to stand against it.
Okay. Let's look at it, that Tehran was actually involved in negotiations when the Israeli regime struck, and of course Iran, and now we know that Trump said he gave the okay for that. So let's look at, what does that mean? Can a country negotiate with such an entity? I mean, your thoughts on that.
The existential debate in Iran is whether they should essentially look west again and trust the Americans, trust the West. I'd ask the question, what has the West done to allow any kind of, you know, positivity and trust? I can't honestly think of anything within these negotiations or any of the behavior the West has had towards Iran since 1979 which should give the Iranian people any hope that the West is really serious about genuinely treating Iran as a sovereign nation that doesn't need to be subjugated. So I would say that there's an element of delusionalism within anybody who doesn't look at the facts on the ground and the track record. I mean, it's not just that the US reneges on the JCPOA with Iran. They reneged on the Paris Agreement. They reneged on the TTP, the Trans-Pacific Treaty as well. And I could go on. I mean, Trump did it at the beginning of this term. He was ripping up all sorts of agreements and off-the-record alliances. So they're not really there to be trusted. So I can't understand why there is even a debate within Iran to say they should in some way be creating any rapprochements or engaging in good faith with America and its allies.
Let's talk about this side of things and the leader of the revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. I mean, Larry Johnny talked about his role today throughout, since the revolution, especially during the 12-day war, how he basically took charge in all aspects of Iran's response to the enemy, the importance of that, and understanding, in general, the power of this revolution.
I think at the heart of any leader worth his salt, there has to be wisdom. There have to be certain qualities and values. And it's those values of virtues, and values and virtues, you know, compassion, wisdom, basira, as we call it as well, insight, deep insight. And justice, these are just some of the things that a leader needs, integrity, honesty. You know, if I was to go through those, and I would tick off, you know, all those you could tick off with Ayatollah Khamenei on a personal level, on an individual level. If you looked at his lifestyle, looked at his behavior, his politics, he would pretty much tick off the box on all of those, which means that that's a great leader as far as I'm concerned. And if I put that up as a comparison to the leaders certainly in the West, then I'm afraid they are absolutely bereft of most of those values, because for them, profit comes first. The orders that are given by the people that Tony was hinting at, you know, the City of London Corporation, the Wall Street, the money mafias, they won't do anything to tamper with their masters, as it were. And there are many institutions, not just the state institutions, which are also subject to the same mastership, the IMF, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, the WHO, the UN, IAEA, you name it, every international institution, ultimately they have their claws in it. And it is the case that they can make nations collapse. Because tomorrow, let me just give you one example. If the City of London was to pull its funds in Britain. Virtually 30 to 40% of our GDP in Britain is based on the business that goes on in the corporation or in the City of London, in that square mile. If they were to pull the plug on that tomorrow, there wouldn't be any bread on the shelves of Sainsbury's or whatever a local supermarket. People would be starving. There would be an implosion of the entire system. So that's the level of power these people exercise in the background. And the nations themselves are indebted to these forces. The Americans, to the tune of $30 trillion. Who do they owe that debt to? The British, maybe, what, $3, $4 trillion now? The reality is that people need to sort of broaden their lens, understand the way the world works, the way the system works, and then most of these politicians are puppets who are on strings and told what to do. Ayatollah Khamenei has no strings of that sort, not of the international sort. He stoically stood by the principles of Ayatollah Khomeini, and the first thing that is on his mind is the sovereignty and the integrity of Iran as a nation. That is a fundamental problem for the globalist powers, because they want Iran's oil, they want Iran's strategic positioning, they want the Hormuz Strait for themselves, they want the gas, and until they've got it, they won't rest. You see what they did in Syria, they are relentless because they have as much money as they need, and they now don't use the US military or the British military because they can't sustain those forces, and they use proxy forces as they're doing, for instance, maybe in Sudan. Look at what UAE is doing with the RSF in Sudan as we speak. They've done the same in Syria with Mr. Sharra running around with his trimmed beard, now working for them openly, but he's been working for them for decades. And the reality is they're using these kinds of proxies to create balkanization. Wherever they think they can't control things totally, Syria, right, Libya, they create balkanization. That's what they want in Iran.
Well, let's talk about that, Tony. I mean, how likely are these actions to backfire on the U.S.? We've seen the U.S.'s bullying technique that either a certain country or people listens to what Washington has to say, or suddenly you'll see tension inside that country or coup d'etats or assassination. How likely is this, though, to backfire? I mean, Larijani said today, we saw it with Daesh and partially what has happened in various Western countries. I mean, your thoughts about that?
Well, it is backfiring, isn't it? Look at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, how that's been growing and developing its strategy. Look at the BRICS, how they've been growing, and the replacement around the world of the SWIFT payment system, which is obviously very important when it comes to trade. So the world is waking up, I think, to the attempt of the United States for hegemony. We are going to see, I've no doubt, into the future, a multipolar world. They're not going to get their way. They set out around about 2000, this is the first I heard about it, the United States set out this plan called the Unified Command Structure, where they got a bit of pen and divided the entire map of the world up into United States commands, and they decided that there were going to be various branches of the Pentagon dominating each part of the world, or at least trying to. Now, you know, for example, the drones that are killing innocent civilians who are trying to surrender, pensioners controlled by Ukraine, who are trying to get across from the Ukrainian besieged villages and towns across to the Russian lines, are being killed by Ukrainian drones. These drones may well be being steered from EUCOM in Stuttgart by American soldiers. So we don't know where they're being. This is one of the problems that Drone Wars UK, as a British pressure group, has been trying to find out who is controlling these first-person view drones that are killing surrendering civilians in Ukraine, trying to get to the Russian lines. So, you know, you can see everywhere this unified command structure of the United States is attempting to dominate, but it's no secret anymore. And everyone knows that the Americans are trying to push them around and bully them. So, of course, they're standing together for a multipolar world. And I would like to say one thing particularly about vision, because I don't think it's just Iran that's putting forward vision. There are various other countries that are doing this, including in our own country. You won't get to hear about it, but we have people here pushing visions of collectivized settlements, structures of plot lands, for example, people are being able to build their buying a field and building their own homes on there because the rents and the mortgages are so, the house prices are so expensive here in the UK. So the people with other visions, which is about decentralisation. I think much of the push since World War II has been for centralisation of power. For example, Brussels, the United States of Europe, they're centralising power massively in Brussels with NATO and the EU. And so the reaction here in the UK, which you'll probably get, very few people will get to hear about, has been people buying small areas of land and actually starting to build small communities of their own, growing their own food, this sort of thing, because they know that the system at the moment, as it is in the UK, is a mass surveillance Orwellian system, which is designed to collapse. The energy networks are designed to collapse. The food networks are designed to collapse because they're incredibly fragile. We have very little food security.
Right.
So alternative visions are out there. You just have to look hard to see them, or maybe switch off your social media and your smartphone and go out and talk to people and find them that way.
Okay, said most in 1 minute. I mean, where do you see this going? On the one hand, we know that we're in the middle of this transition from that unilateral to the multilateral world. Very dangerous time on the one hand. Also, many would say a very interesting time of possibilities. And Tony just talked about some. I mean, your thoughts. 1 minute.
I think that the rise of China is inevitable, no matter what happens. And if China stays true to its current philosophy, then you're going to get a kind of you're going to get a better reality than the American imperialism has certainly given. But there again, you know, all of these powers, when they start off, they're pretty benign, and then they get greedy. Mm. But there is a movement away. The de-dollarization has to happen quicker. These corporation, Shanghai Corporation and BRICS have to be much more strident and move faster in terms of uncoupling themselves from American slavery. It's not that easy because the Chinese are tied into the American economy, so I don't think it's going to be an easy process. However, Iran's offer of potential offer, which I don't think is fully implemented itself, and it perhaps should, things like tackling usury, tackling injustice, economic injustice, ideas of zakat, the ideas of charity, the ideas of family, bringing back those traditional values and right. What I talked about earlier in terms of the virtues of human beings, those have to be, that drum has to be beaten okay. louder. And there will be people around the world which it will resonate with. And I think that that there can be a possibility of a counter movement.
All right. And on that note, thank you so much. Out of time. Said Mohsen Abbas out of London, Tony Gosling out of Bristol. Thank you both for being with me. And thank you, viewers, for being with us on another Spotlight. Hope to see you right here next time. Goodbye.